This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So according to his party, Mr. Kibao was forcibly removed from a bus by suspected security agents while traveling from Dar es Salaam to his hometown, Tanga.
That's reporter Charles Kombe on the abduction and murder of a senior member of Tanzania's main opposition party. Details coming up also. Kenya begins 3 days of national mourning today following the death of at least 21 students in a boarding school. And the U.S. extends broad sanctions against those involved in the ongoing conflict in northern Ethiopia. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. There are calls for a thorough investigation into the kidnapping and death of a Tanzanian opposition party official over the weekend. Ali Mohamed Kibao, a retired military intelligence officer, was forced off a bus at gunpoint on Friday by suspected security agents. His body was found in Dar es Salaam on Saturday. We reached out to journalist Charles Kombe in Dar es Salaam for more on the death of Kibao, a member of the secretariat of the Chadema opposition party. First, we asked him about what is known about Kibao's death.
Well, on Friday, members of the Party for Democracy and Progress, commonly known as Chadema, started posting information online, informing the public about the alleged abduction of Mr. Mohamed Al Kibao. As we all know that Kibao was a member of the secretariat of the main opposition Chadema party. So according to his party, Mr. Kibao was forcibly removed from a bus by suspected security agents while traveling from Dar es Salaam to his hometown, Tanga. Despite efforts by his party, he could not be located at any police station in the country. Later, his body was discovered in Ununio, a waterfront district of Dar es Salaam. And according to the chairman of Chadema, Mr. Freeman Mbowe, the postmortem examination revealed that Mr. Kibao had been severely beaten and had acid poured on his face. And today he was laid to rest in his hometown in the Tanga region.
Then I asked Kombe about the Tanzanian government's reaction to his death.
Well, the government expressed its shock at the death of Mr. Kibao, and President Samia Hassan has ordered an investigation into the case. On X, she stated that Tanzania is a democratic country and every citizen has the right to live. She also emphasized the government I lead does not tolerate such brutal acts. So people in Tanzania are looking for justice, not only in Mr. Kibao's case, but also for other abductions that remain unsolved in the country, as the number of those missing are still increasing.
Finally, Kombe spoke about the situation for critics of the government under President Samia Suluhu Hassan. She had seemed to be something of a reformist when she came to office and more tolerant of opposition voices.
Well, what I can tell you is that since President Samia Suluhu came into power in 2021, there has been a noticeable shift from her predecessor, John Magufuli, as she introduced reforms aiming to improving media rights and democracy. We all saw that at the beginning. However, the recent crackdown on the opposition, along with killings and abductions, has led right groups and opposition politicians to fear that these actions might signal a return to the oppressive policies seen during the late president's regime. So the big question that remains in the minds of Tanzanians is, when will these acts come to an end?
The United States today called for an investigation into Kibao's death. We'll continue to follow developments in Kibao's death. You can find updates on voaafrica.com and all your social media networks. Look for voaafrica.com. Kenya begins 3 days of national mourning today following the death of at least 21 students in a boarding school, Inferno, in central Kenya. Authorities say 17 children are still unaccounted for as parents line up for DNA testing to identify bodies burned beyond recognition. Juma Majanga reports from the VOA Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Distraught parents and relatives gathered to give samples for DNA testing Monday at the Naromoro Hostel in central Kenya, 4 days after a fire killed more than 20 students at Endarasha Hillside Boarding School. John Mwangi said he still does not know the whereabouts of his child, a student at the school.
At least to be a reprieve to 20 parents. I might be among them. I don't know. That's why we are here. So we are hanging on hope.
Kenyan authorities say the inferno broke out Thursday in a dormitory housing 156 students, the majority of whom escaped. However, some of the 21 killed were burned beyond recognition. Chief Government Pathologist Johansen Oduor says DNA testing will help families get closure.
These will be undergoing a process of collection of DNA from them at the hospital by the government chemist. Then on Tuesday, we'll start the autopsy. And during the autopsy, we'll be documenting the cause of death and also taking samples for DNA, which will later be reconciled, so that at the end of the day, we'll be able to unite the parents to their children.
Officials say 17 children remain unaccounted following the tragedy, which has devastated the school community. Some parents and relatives have been camping at the school to demand answers. The Red Cross and Ministry of Health have been offering support to those affected. Deborah Baraza is Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Health.
We have the Emergency Disaster Preparedness and Response Team. We have the counselors or the mental health and psychosocial support. We have forensics teams on the ground, and they are supporting in every way.
Officials have yet to determine the cause of the fire, with investigations still ongoing. There have been a number of incidents of fires at Kenyan boarding schools in recent years, prompting national concerns about safety standards. A report released in 2020 by the country's Auditor General said many schools lack proper equipment to handle fires and that many dormitories are not constructed in accordance with government regulations. Education Cabinet Secretary Julius Ogamba says a review of the rules is needed.
Perhaps as a country, it has reached that time when we need to relook at those rules and regulations, which are policies, and find out whether it is time for us to move them a step further and make them laws so that there are penalties that will attach to any person who violates them.
Kenya's deadliest school fire was in 2001, when at least 67 students died in a dormitory inferno at Kianguli High School in the southeast of the country. As the country marks 3 days of mourning for another school fire, experts say the government needs to do more to ensure the safety of learners. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
At the recent forum on China-Africa cooperation, African leaders eye mounting great power competition between the United States and China over resources and influence on the continent. Washington has warned against what it sees as Beijing's malign influence. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi asked Paul Nanatulia, a research associate at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, who attended last week's Africa-China gathering, what the U.S. could do to counter Chinese influence in Africa.
Well, Mohammed, I think United States has a long history in Africa. United States has strong relations with different African countries. African countries have got relations with the United States that they value, and African countries also have relations with other parts of the world, including China, European Union, Japan, and so on. African countries have this approach of wanting to diversify their international relationships. United States, I think, has a strategic opportunity to work with African countries, for instance, to improve and grow their private sectors, because this is a key niche that United States does quite well. United States should be working with African countries and private sectors and civil society organizations to look at how Africa's human resources can be developed through technology, through education and training. I think this is absolutely vital. I think United States has opportunities, and African countries have opportunities to talk about the continent's special demographic reality, which is that those 1.2 billion people in Africa, over 78, some is even 80% of that 1.2 billion is between the ages of 15 and 30. What does this tell us? This tells us that the African continent is basically a continent of teenagers and young adults. What do teenagers and young adults want? They want rapid economic development. They want technology. They want better livelihoods. They want an improved standard of living. They want democracy. They want human rights. They want better standards of management. There are certain things that a demographic like that uniquely want. And I think United States has an opportunity to sit down and talk to representatives of different cohorts and different organizations, you know, different communities within this cohort, to see how together United States and young people, because it's essentially young people that are going to be driving that continent, can actually work together to improve their economic situation and to improve their livelihoods.
So how would you compare this summit between China and African countries to the previous U.S.-African summit?
Well, I think FOCAC is a very highly institutionalized structure. It's not just a summit. It's a process. There are institutions within FOCAC that meet outside of these summits. You know, the summit is really just to make strategic decisions. But there are institutions, there are these sub-forums that are addressing different issues, local government, addressing things like poverty, addressing things like peace and security, looking at agriculture and health, different areas. I mean, FOCAC has 9 strategic pillars. But FOCAC is a process. It is a machinery that takes on board different issues, different agendas as it moves along. And I think this is probably one lesson that other Africa Plus One summits can learn from FOCAC, namely that it is regular, it is predictable, it has met once every 3 years, alternately between China and an African country. The only other Africa Plus One summit that meets that regularly is TICAD, the Tokyo International Conference on African Development, which is meeting next year, for again, also for the 9th time. The other platforms tend to be ad hoc. Some of them have met once, others have met twice, others meet like once every 6 years. For instance, the Russia-Africa summit only started meeting after Russia felt isolated over its invasion of Ukraine, and therefore Russia needed allies in Africa and the global south. So then all of a sudden, the summit is now back in vogue. But the China-Africa summit, the FOCAC, what I would call the FOCAC summit, because there's the FOCAC summit and there's FOCAC as an organization, has been very, very consistent, despite the, you know, problems that might arise from time to time on the African continent. So I think this is one major lesson that other Africa Plus One summits can take.
That was Paul Nanatulia, a researcher at Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington. He spoke to my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. During the Tigray conflict in Ethiopia 3 years ago, President Joe Biden issued an executive order allowing the United States to impose sanctions on those in the government of Ethiopia, government of Eritrea, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, and the Amhara Regional Government, among others, who continue to pursue conflict over negotiations. The measures included visa restrictions and economic sanctions on some officials from Eritrea and Ethiopia. In November 2022, the Ethiopian government and the Tigray People's Liberation Front signed a peace deal following U.S. and African Union-led negotiations in Pretoria. However, less than a year, fighting erupted in the country's northern Amhara region when the Ethiopian government attempted to disband an insurgent group called FANNO. Biden recently extended the executive order authorizing broad sanctions against those involved in the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia. He said the situation in northern Ethiopia has been marked by activists that threaten the peace, security, and stability of Ethiopia and the Greater Horn of Africa region. He also said the fighting poses a threat to U.S. national security and foreign policy. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yeheyes Wuhib, in Washington, and would love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. After being declared the winner of Algeria's election, President Abdelmadjid Tebboune has joined his two challengers in criticizing the country's election authority for announcing results that contradicted earlier turnout figures and local tallies. The claim of irregularities mar what appears to be a landslide victory for the 78-year-old head of state. The Associated Press reports that the country's independent election authority on Sunday announced that Tebboune had won 95% of Saturday's vote. The tally far outpaces his challengers, Islamist Abdullahi Hassan Sharif, who received only 3%, and socialist Yusuf Aouchita, who got just 2%. Hours later, the three campaigns jointly issued a statement accusing the country's election chairman of announcing contradictory results. Part of the issue is that the election authority said about 48% of eligible voters cast ballots, but according to the final tally, only about a quarter of voters went to the polls. Close to the U.S. capital of Washington, the rural state of West Virginia was solidly Democratic for most of the 20th century. But now it's a Republican stronghold, delivering overwhelming wins for former President Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson went to Berkeley Springs, West Virginia, to see how the 2024 election season is playing out.
Late summer in a West Virginia tourist town. Families having fun before the return to school and cooler temperatures, and thoughts turning to the dramatic change in the presidential election. From Joe Biden to Kamala Harris. John Lynch is a West Virginia voter.
It's going to attract a lot of the female vote, the minority vote to her, but there's no substance there. She has nothing to run on, no track record to run on.
West Virginia has consistently delivered former President Donald Trump some of his strongest wins. But voters here are worried about the 2024 election. Chanel Ducroix is a West Virginia voter.
It makes me nervous because, to be honest, I'm a Trump supporter. But I think everybody who was kind of unsure will now go with Kamala.
This rural state plays an outsized role in national politics thanks to its only elected Democratic official, Senator Joe Manchin, who switched to being an independent earlier this year. He played a key role in passing major pieces of legislation for the Biden administration.
But with Manchin retiring this year, Republicans are almost certain to pick up a Senate seat with popular Governor Jim Justice in the running. Marty Gearhart is in the Republican leadership of the West Virginia Congress.
We mine coal, and there's been an attack on coal, and Governor Justice owns coal mines. So we expect to see that industry protected.
Many voters blame Democrats for the decline of West Virginia's main industry, coal mining. But West Virginia Democrats at the party's recent national convention in Chicago are trying to change that perception. Troy Miller is a West Virginia Democratic delegate.
That is directly because of automation, because of the coal bosses automating away the jobs and switching to surface mining rather than underground mining. It's a convenient scapegoat to blame environmental regulations.
Justice's Democratic opponent, Glenn Elliott, tells voters that Republican control has not been good for the state's economy or growth.
We have to encourage small businesses in ways that hasn't been happening, and we have to keep our young people there. Our state legislature keeps passing really restrictive laws like the abortion ban, like LGBTQ laws that are basically sending young people a message that we don't want you here.
But in this strongly pro-Trump state, most voters place the blame for economic problems on Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Why would you want to pay more, a dollar more for gasoline? Why would you want to pay 25% more for groceries? Why would you want to have a mortgage interest rate that's doubled during the Biden administration? And she has to own that.
In a poll conducted in late August by a West Virginia news organization, Trump leads Harris by 27 points. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Berkeley Springs, West Virginia.
International health officials say while mpox cases are spreading in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and across a number of countries in Africa, governments are stepping up measures to respond to the unprecedented surge of the epidemic. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking during an online news briefing late Friday, experts from the World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention outlined a comprehensive response plan to contain the mpox outbreak. Matshidiso Moeti from Botswana is the WHO Regional Director for Africa.
Following the declaration of mpox as a public health emergency of international concern by WHO and a public health emergency of continental security by the Africa CDC, we are already working to scale up the operational response in affected countries, deploying some resources and experts close to the affected communities.
Moeti provided details on the operations.
In the DRC, we are intensifying our support and established in Goma an operational hub. We've been able to procure more than $1 million worth of key medical supplies that we are providing in the country. And we have mobilized and deployed our existing staff in the country, about 400 field staff already in the country, to support the key aspects of the response of what government is doing.
Last month, the WHO declared mpox a public health emergency of international concern due to the rapid spread of the epidemic. The outbreak is concentrated in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but the virus has also spread further across several other African countries. On Friday, Kenya reported its fifth case of mpox. Mary Mudhoni is the principal secretary for the Kenya Ministry of Health.
It was involving a 29-year-old female from Mombasa. The patient is currently in isolation. So while the patient has no recent travel history to a country reporting mpox case, the spouse had recently traveled to Rwanda. In the last 24 hours, we have screened more than 17,000 people at all ports of entry in Kenya.
The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says thousands of children in the Democratic Republic of Congo and neighboring countries are at significant risk of contracting the mpox virus as cases continue to surge. Since the start of 2024, DRC has reported over 5,000 confirmed mpox cases, with more than 635 associated deaths, the Africa CDC reports. However, experts say the actual numbers could be higher. The Africa CDC is the public health agency of the African Union. Confirmed mpox cases have been detected in several countries, including Burundi, Rwanda, Uganda, Kenya, and South Africa. Cases have also been found recently in Sweden and Thailand. The patients had recently traveled to Africa. Yesterday, DRC received the first shipment of 99,100 doses of mpox vaccine from the European Union and is expected to kick off a vaccination campaign aimed at curbing the rising epidemic. Africa CDC officials say an additional 100,900 doses are expected on Saturday. Previously known as monkeypox, mpox is an infectious disease caused by a virus transmitted from animals to humans, with cases often found close to tropical rainforests where there are animals that carry the virus. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Tien Wong, Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.